ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mania! Welcome to Mania Mania 23. I am your host, Terry, Mr. Catlett. Catlett, here as always with my preferred tag team partner, the best in the world, Jouet, Mr. Holt. Holt?
Yeah.
And today we're reviewing for you WrestleMania 23. Jouet, so much has happened in the past year.
Yes.
Between WrestleMania 22 and 23. Mm-hmm. What has happened?
Okay, so in January of 2007, The Undertaker won the Royal Rumble.
Woo!
Which is about time, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. 2007, he was
already
in
it? Yeah, he was 58 at that time, so yeah. I'm glad he finally climbed that hill.
Yep, he had already entered the retirement home. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he won, and he decided, since there was the brand split, he got to choose if he wanted to go after the world champion or the WWE champion.
Right.
So he went after the world champion, which was Batista.
Yeah.
So then that feud was set up, and then we needed to find out who's going to face the WWE champion, which is John Cena. So there was a triple threat between Edge, Randy Orton, and Shawn Michaels.
Right.
Shawn Michaels won that. Shawn Michaels and John Cena at this point were actually the tag team champions.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is strange because there's not a tag team championship match on this card.
That is odd because usually that's how they get a lot of people some cash.
Yeah.
At least have an eight-way tag title match or something. Right.
Then another one is the Battle of the Billionaires between Vince McMahon and Donald Trump.
This was the big one.
Yep.
This is Donald Trump's, fifth appearance on WrestleMania?
This was his fifth appearance at WrestleMania, nice. Yes. Mm-hmm. 4, 5, 7, 18, and 23.
Off the top of your head.
Off the top
amazing.
Of my head.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. I think it was 18 at least. Whatever.
We'll check it later, everybody.
Yes. Whoever lost would get their head shaved. So they each picked a wrestler. Vince McMahon picked Umaga. Donald Trump picked Bobby Lashley. Then whoever won that match, or whoever lost that match, their representative would have their head shaved.
Based on this match alone, this version of WrestleMania 23 had the highest buy rate of any WrestleMania in history.
That's nuts.
That is nuts. Based on a hair-for-hair match.
Yes.
For someone that you know is not going to get his head shaved.
Like, right. Donald Trump's not.
Do you think there was anyone that even turned this on thinking, yeah, they're going to be able to pay Donald enough money to shave his head.
Yeah, marks. Superman.
those
are those are legitimate marks. Those are life.
But there were that many marks out there that thought, oh, no, this makes sense. Yeah.
Those aren't even like wrestling marks. They're just real life marks. They're just idiots who don't know.
And again, this man will be the 45th president of the United States. Excellent. Well, is that all you have to set up this WrestleMania?
Yeah, let's
fantastic.
Go
let me set the stage. It is April 1st. 2007 at Ford Field in Detroit, Michigan. We're back 20 years later.
Wow.
To a crowd of only 80,104.
That's it.
Which is probably pretty much exactly what the original one in Detroit was. I love how one of the biggest debates in just wrestling history is the actual attendance figure for WrestleMania 3. That's pretty great. But we open with the promo for WrestleMania. And, of course, WrestleMania has returned to Detroit, and it's all grown up now.
It is.
That is the catch line for this one. And then we cut right to Aretha Franklin singing America the Beautiful at her own pace.
Yep.
She is not in a hurry.
No, she's taking
Aretha's
her time.
Aretha's got nowhere to be. Each note is just in its own time, and Aretha's just enjoying it. But
free
I really
time.
Did like the shout-out to WrestleMania 3 by having her back.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of a nice little callback for them. I thought that was pretty cool.
I like that they cut the audio from Vince McMahon introducing her from WrestleMania 3 into it. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that was a nice little tie-in. I liked that a lot. Some of the promo videos, and I really kind of like this because of this, we're all grown up now. They had all these little vignettes throughout the entire broadcast of when we were young. And so it's basically each wrestler talking about their dream of getting to the biggest stage possible. And they'd have all these little kids, decked out in the gimmick gear of each professional. My favorite was the Stone Cold Kid because he's slamming milk and drinking milk instead of beer.
That's
I really
fun.
Liked that touch a lot. But those were pretty cool
fun
vignettes
bit.
Throughout
yeah.
the deal.
That's cool.
But now we're ready. We're welcome to WrestleMania by our announcers, and we go straight to match number one, which is between
Jeff Hardy versus King Booker with Charmel versus Finlay versus CM Punk versus Mr. Kennedy versus Matt Hardy versus Randy Orton versus versus Edge.
And this is for the Money in the Bank. And I, the first thing I'm struck by is how bad King Booker's entrance is. because, like, the last WrestleMania, he had the gimmick match with the Boogeyman, yeah?
Yep.
And then this one, now he's a full-on royalty.
Yeah, he won King of the Ring.
After, you know, what was it? Two or three WrestleManias ago, they were just talking about, you know, what a gutter trash he was.
Yeah.
Turning his life around, and now he's walking in with a crown and doing royal bows and all of that stuff.
Sticking his pinky out at any time.
We have the usual chaotic start to this one. What did you think of this Money in the Bank? I was excited to see CM Punk, and
yeah.
I forgot about Mr. Kennedy. He had kind of a short run.
He did have a short run. Generally speaking, I really enjoy Money in the Banks.
Mm-hmm.
They're a lot of fun. They mean something because you get a championship opportunity at any point
in
the next year.
Stakes, uh-huh.
It's just there's so much weight to it, and then there's always going to be an amazing spot in here at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of fun watching these.
This
and
one
they're great
cool.
to start out manias.
They did come out with some, like you said, some pretty good. I mean, basically how these matches work. It's so hard to look like you're trying to win because it's really all about timing, and
mm-hmm.
they're really just trying to set up the next spot, which is fine because you just know, oh, you're going to see something death-defying.
Yeah.
Tons of big moves. You got Ed suplexing Matt Hardy onto a ladder set up in the corner. You got Ed spearing everyone in the ring until, CM Punk spears him. And then Punk did the whirly bird with the ladder.
Yep.
It... That one looked kind of weak because the wrestlers actually had to run into the ladder instead of him hit it.
Yeah.
So it's basically Punk just turning in the center of the ring and then wrestlers running into the ladder. It was kind of weak.
Like, it works better in like when they're in smaller rings because the WWE has such a large ring. It's the biggest ring. It's like 20 by 20. Most are like 16 by 16 or 18. So it makes a little bit more sense when they're laying on the ground and they stand up and get hit with it. But in this one... It's the ring so big, it just doesn't make sense.
But it was just like each wrestler just kind of running into it just looked funny to me. Anytime Jeff Hardy grabs a ladder, you know something special's about to happen.
Yep.
And he sets up the tallest ladder in the center of the ring, and Edge is already laid out on a ladder that's kind of propped up between the ring apron and the barricade.
Yep.
And so,
I mean, they loved it, setting that ladder up in this spot.
Oh, my goodness. But, I mean, they set it up really early, and then they get back to it later.
I like when they do that.
Especially when it's the person that set it up that actually ends up going through it.
That's
I really dig
good,
that.
Yeah.
But Jeff Hardy's on top of that ladder, and he does, I mean, what do you call it, a leg drop?
Yeah, I think it was just a leg drop.
Oh, my gosh.
That's
one of the biggest bumps I've ever seen. Breaks the ladder clean.
Yeah.
Edge kind of sat up a little bit as he was taking it. I'm sure that was on purpose to withstand the blow. But that camera view played in real time from the barricade.
Oh, no. Yeah.
It looked dead. Like,
yeah.
It happened so fast and the impact was so huge.
Yes.
I was just surprised that either one of them could even keep going. That was so cool.
I'm pretty sure that like they set those ladders up so early so they don't get it confused, because those the ones that they set up are made out of wood. So when it breaks, so it's not steel.
Oh, really?
Yes, because when it breaks, sometimes you can see like sawdust on the ground.
Nah, okay, that makes sense.
Because they set it up, so then they don't.
I'm a mark. I bought it. I thought there were steel ladders.
So then they don't accidentally.
I take everything I just said back.
So then they don't actually set up like a steel one, and then like. Edge really dies, or Jeff Hardy really breaks his leg.
All right, well, then never mind. Yeah. It was just
it's
a
still
routine
a good spot.
Still
a good spot.
Way to just, take your wood ladder bump.
Just opening up that curtain so you can peek behind it a little bit.
Let's just get out the kendo sticks that are made out of straw.
Yeah. All right. This one's made out of licorice, guys.
Punk and Kennedy are really kind of featured in this one a lot.
Yes.
Mr. Kennedy was getting a big push at this time. Mm-hmm. And they're really hoping that he would kind of take off until he turned out to be a jerk. And, of course, you know, Punk's really kind of earned his way up until this point.
Mm-hmm.
They both kind of Hornswoggle actually comes out. I never understood the Hornswoggle thing, but here he comes. Yeah. That bump he took from Mr. Kennedy off the ladder was pretty great.
Kennedy had him on his
shoulders. What do they call that move?
Kennedy had him on his shoulders, and then he did like a rolling front roll.
Flip, yeah.
Yeah, so it's almost like a rolling senton, almost, okay. I guess.
Hornswoggle took
off the ladder. Off the ladder. Like, he's
a
little
tiny
person.
Little man.
Yeah, he's a little person, and that is not... Oh, man.
This match ends with CM Punk ascending the ladder and then Kennedy stopping him. Punk knocks him off, and then Kennedy actually goes and knocks him off with the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's down. Kennedy ascends the ladder, grabs the Money in the Bank, and he is the winner of the Money in the Bank. So we have our first winner of the evening,
Mr. Kennedy.
That was so annoying.
Kennedy.
Just keep saying your name over and
Kennedy.
Over.
Kennedy.
I love it.
He apparently he was an announcer for like his high school basketball or something like that.
Is that it?
And that's what he used to do.
Okay, well, it paid off. It was a nice gimmick.
Yeah.
We go to footage of the Condemned film premiere featuring Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's right. Stone Cold did movies.
Yeah, he did.
We're now in the era where the WWE's probably biggest stars of all time have kind of left.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're out doing their own thing, making movies. Yeah. This one's The Condemned, and all the WWE stars are there.
I enjoyed The Condemned.
Having a good... I never saw it.
I watched it.
But if Ron Simmons... It's the film that Ron Simmons reviewed as damn.
Yeah.
So I may give it a shot.
Everything he reviews is damn.
But that takes us right to match number two between...
The Great Khali versus Kane.
This was a little under...
Awful match.
A six-minute match that... made me wish for a Playboy pillow fight. I don't know. There, you know, because of Andre the Giant in the past, I think Vince McMahon has a predilection for two things. The freak show, meaning like the super tall, super bizarre person, or just the super muscular.
Yes.
And so either one of those two are going to get featured. He's going to try and draw money off of.
Mm-hmm.
The Great Khali is no giant in that, like, he's... I was impressed with, and we've talked about how Kane is a company man to the end.
Mm-hmm.
He went out and tried to make this guy look
like a devastating monster. Everything he could.
So I tons of respect for Kane for going out there and doing it.
Mm-hmm.
He tried so hard, but the Khali is just so slow.
Yeah.
And he doesn't sell. It was just... It's almost a gimmick match.
Yeah. I have Khali maybe the worst seller in history. He is awful. Like, he does not... It's really, really bad to see this, because, like, Kane is doing everything he possibly can, and it's just not working.
Yeah. You want... Like, if you were to watch Khali and the Big... Like, the Big Show's a really great example of an athletic big man that can actually... You know, he will sell in the right amount for a giant, but Khali's just kind of not doing anything. Kane had to do so much work in this one. And in the end, Khali's trying to get heat by choking Kane with this chain that showed up out of nowhere, really, that they used. Like, after the match was over, he just starts choking him out, just trying to get tons of heat. The crowd really wasn't into what was going on. It just seemed like a missed opportunity. Yeah.
And Khali pinning him with just, like, one foot on his chest, I'm like...
Well, yeah, I mean...
That's just so...
Kane goes and works so hard, and then you just kind of bury him with this kind of, you know, cheap dominating pin. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From what I hear, also, Khali's kind of a dick in the back.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're that tall, you can kind of do what you want.
Oh, well, I guess he's in, like, India, he's, like, a big star. So people, like, treat him like royalty over there.
Right.
But he doesn't realize that that's not how it is everywhere.
Right. Not everywhere's India.
Exactly.
Well, this match kind of left me a little cold, and I was kind of glad it's over. And I'm sorry Kane had to do this, but, you know, I look forward to that Hall of Fame induction, because you deserve it, sir.
It'll be coming.
So we go to the back, and Eugene, our favorite, what would you call him, a special needs wrestler?
Yep.
I don't know.
That's his gimmick,
Is talking to Crime Time, and for some reason Eugene was down, and they got a dance team for him, which I wish my friends would
Sorry, Terry. No, I do not have the budget to get some Divas. I noticed you showed up
today without Dance Team.
Well, I mean, if I had Divas just hanging around and say, hey, would you like to dance, Layla?
I'm just saying, I saw you talking to some ladies last night, you could have just, all right, whatever. All right.
Well, next time we're out in public, I'll get a Dance Team
Thank
for you.
Thank you so much. But this Dance Team is earning their money and they're dancing.
Yeah.
Then the camera whips over and there's the fabulous Moolah and Mae Young dressed in the same outfits as the dance team.
Of course.
They start to dance as well, and then this becomes a spot to get pretty much any former WWE legend or superstar that happened to be in the back.
Slick the Doctor of Stizile, he said.
Dusty Rhodes was there.
Pat Patterson, Sergeant Pat was Slaughter. In
the, back. The Dragon.
Yes,
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat actually showed up. And everybody got a little check off this.
Jimmy Hart, IRS, Mean Gene, The Fink. And then, of course, Ron Simmons.
With his one word, damn.
Damn!
And we finally, after all this, we've been treated to a really bad Kane match, this terrible, terrible sketch.
Yep.
And then we finally get to go to match number three, which is between
MVP versus Chris Benoit.
And this is for the United States title. It's a little bit under a 10-minute match. Which I normally would like to see Chris Benoit go longer with that because I really like him. But this match really didn't do very much for me. I guess I'm just not a super big fan of MVP.
Mm-hmm.
We had a kind of a chain wrestling open. So showing these guys skills. MVP is very athletic. I guess I just never really got with him. Like I just couldn't really get it.
Yeah, I don't. He's pretty good in the ring. I don't buy his character. Mm-hmm. It's just not 100% believable.
Maybe
he's just not committed to it completely.
Well, I mean, you know, it's another I'm the next bad black guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you gonna do? It's a little different. I'm gonna wear this really body covering unitard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
The whole gimmick just kind of failed for me, and he didn't have. He was fine in the ring, but not the outstanding skills to cover up for the bad gimmick, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a fine gimmick, but it's been done before.
Exactly.
So you need it. If you're gonna reuse a gimmick, you have to amp it up.
Mm-hmm.
You need to heighten that. If you're not heightening it, then what's
the point?
Yeah,
we didn't see any uniqueness from it
at
all. We had the classic Benoit 3 suplex sequence and then the flying headbutt, which I'm a huge fan of. But nothing really outstanding in this match. I thought it was pretty boring. What is your assessment, sir?
Basically the same thing. The three German suplex bit that he does is always great. I think he did it like twice, I want to say.
One time, I think the third one was countered for a roll-up.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. But I did kind of enjoy, like, MVP had almost like his own version of a people's elbow, where he, like, he does, instead of like throwing his arms around, he makes a basketball shot, and then he says, baller, or count it. I look like he said baller, but then I think Michael Cole said he said count it. So I don't know.
I'm not buying baller.
Yeah. Or whatever. But either way, it was like that to me was like he took something that's already been done and made it his own, which I enjoyed that because when I watched that, I was like, oh, okay. I bought into it a little bit more because of something that he made his own. But besides that, the match was just, it was okay.
What if he did the flare strut and then went, boo? Like, is that enough of a change?
That is not enough of a change.
I don't know. Everything about him, I just wasn't going over on. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that could also have been like, I need something like the people's elbow. So I'll just do the people's elbow, except do this.
That's what I mean. Like,
yeah, I guess
it's like we're
okay.
Kinda,
take it back, Terry. Take it back.
No. But we're homogenizing gimmicks that have already been used and just slightly altering them instead of making them unique.
Yeah.
They put him in with a great guy to kind of elevate him, but there was nothing in this match that I really because you know MVP needs a push. He's getting a rub here, right?
Yep.
And I didn't see him. Better after this match.
Right. I agree.
Benoit's established, you know, they can do any, you know, much like we saw Kane, that he can do anything and still be that dude.
Mm-hmm.
We need a rub here, and I didn't see MVP coming out ahead in this one.
Yeah, I buy that. Yeah, pretty fair. That's a fair assessment.
We go right to the back, and it's Donald Trump talking on the phone.
It's your favorite.
I'm going to cry. There were so many bad bits in the show. the boogeyman comes out and starts to interrupt Trump. Trump doesn't sell at all.
No sells the shit out of Boogeyman.
Really just kind of looks at him like, who is this crazy wrestler instead of the gimmick of the Boogeyman?
Yeah.
So shitty no-sell Trump piece. Anyway.
Yeah.
But it's a really bad bit.
Yeah,
but
terrible bit.
It gets us to the video of the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Some really interesting names in this one. JR is inducted. The King Jerry Lawler's inducted. Mr. Perfect and Dusty Rhodes, baby.
Yeah, baby.
Hot times. and then, of course, the members are really are introduced to the crowd at this point. I'm really liking this segment more and more as they've incorporated it into WrestleMania. I think, yeah. I mean, you know, the showcase of the immortals, here are the true immortals.
Yes, I agree.
And, you know, the only sad part for me is when it's posthumously.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
But to their credit, when they do it, it is with so much respect. Like, they bring the families out. It's not just, you know, one person. They'll bring brothers and, mm-hmm. you know, just anyone that was kind of involved in that person's career.
Yeah,
I think they do a really good job of it.
I agree. It's definitely a celebration.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, he died, we're giving him an award. It's like, he meant a lot to this.
Yeah.
And like, Mr. Perfect deserves to be in that like nobody else.
And I think it goes a long way to really establishing how legit that, I mean, it's their own Hall of Fame. It's pretty much a work.
Yeah.
But I mean, it establishes it. I mean, it makes it something really special.
Yeah.
They get the night before,
mm-hmm.
and then they get a really nice spot in the middle of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool.
Yeah, it's a work, but it's a shoot. Like,
yep, a work shoot.
Yeah, like Shawn Stone Cold. He did commentary for a match recently. It was when Mick Foley won the title against The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, that belt's a work, but it's a shoot. Like, because
yeah,
it is a work, but. To get that
they
belt,
take it so seriously.
To get that belt actually means something. Like, to get the Hall of Fame means something. Yes, this is a worked environment, but
mm-hmm.
that's something that you deserve. You earn that. So,
we go right from that feel-good moment straight to match number 4, which is between
Batista versus The Undertaker.
And this is for the World Heavyweight title. We've got good old Teddy Long introducing the combatants. Which was kind of a miss for me. I didn't understand it, but we're still in the world of what, SmackDown and Raw.
Yeah.
So this was apparently a thing.
And he's from SmackDown, so.
I don't know, like, the entrances were really, really, really long in this one.
Yeah.
You know, because they're in these big stadiums.
Taker's
is long anyway, but then we've got, like, the ramp that's, you know, 80 yards long. But I thought Batista took a really exaggerated one because I think he kind of figured, well, if Taker's going to take an hour to get the ring, I'm going to
do it too.
He worked the entire stage.
Yep.
You know,
going back and forth.
You know, posed through all of it and then, you know, finally did the machine gun thing. Pretty much the entrances were longer than the match in this one.
Yeah.
What did you think of this match? This one's a really big match. Looking at it before I watched it, I was thinking, man, The Undertaker's really going to have to carry Batista in,
mm-hmm.
in this one. And that's kind of...
Kind of what happened.
Yeah.
Batista started off with a spear, and then he didn't keep punching Undertaker when he was on the ground.
Yeah.
Like, he like waits for him to get up and then puts him in the corner.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that's not what you do. You spear him, then start punching him on the ground, then if Taker rolls over, he gets on top, and then that's how the kerfuffle starts.
Well, and you're right. It looked like they wanted the brawl start, and it was like they started to do it that way, but then they remember, oh, we got to go 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So you're right. It didn't look legit.
Yeah, it seemed very strange. And then, I don't know, there was just some stuff that it was like kind of like botchy. Like Undertaker went for a clothesline. That clothesline that he does where he like jumps and like hits in the middle of the ring.
The flying clothesline?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Batista was like, I don't know, took it weird, but it was a bit...
Because I noticed it as well. He got in too close. And so as Undertaker elevated, he was too far under him.
Oh,
so it was almost
gotcha.
Like Taker got the top of his head.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Gotcha.
Taker gets so much air under that thing.
He does. He gets a lot of air.
You know, again, it's Batista's lack of kind of ring presence.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't in the right spot.
Yeah, like Taker does get a lot of air in that. You're right.
And it's one of Taker's signature bits that doesn't, you know, get the full effect because, you know, Homeboy isn't in the right spot.
Right.
Which is kind of like... several instances in this match of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Batista, for his great look, is really botch prone. Like, he misses spots. He doesn't necessarily, you know, Taker's got that spot where he jumps through the ropes and lands on you. Is he going to be there?
Right.
Can you imagine sitting there trying to work a match with Batista and not, you know, trying these really high-flying moves and not really knowing if he's going to be there?
Yeah, not knowing if you can trust him.
Yeah, there was a spot in this match that I noted that Batista goes to the top rope and the announcers start really selling it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, he's really... but the crowd just, the crowd just didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
He's up there going to for his big move. The announcers are going nuts trying to build the moment, and the crowd was just like,
all right.
There he goes.
Yep, there he is.
Yep.
Yeah, there was some...
Conversely, everyone on their feet for Old School. Like, the whole place just jumped up. Yeah. So, I mean, you know.
Oh, they did go to the outside. They did start tearing apart one of the announce tables, and Batista did a running power slam through the table.
That was impressive.
That was good. There was some good stuff. Some good stuff in this match. It could have been better.
I really liked the build up to the end of this match, where it was kind of like a Batista bomb build up.
Yep.
Batista bomb. We got choke slams. They're both really putting devastating moves on each other, getting two counts. And then we've just done so many big moves. And then at the end, when Taker kind of reverses that last Batista bomb and gets the tombstone, the crowd has seen a lot of devastation and then barely kicking out.
Yeah.
So I did like the build for the end. But,
yeah. Yeah, it was a solid end. It did build up very well, and it ended strongly.
I know it's too late now, but I would like to limit the announcers to only one. The streak is over. Like, every time they pin Taker,
it's the streak is over.
That's the move they go to, and you become anesthetized to it.
Yeah.
It's no longer an exciting point if that's your thing every time that he gets pinned with some sort of devastation. They did it this one. They do it.
Yeah.
Once the streak became the big sell, that became how the announcers would try and sell it every pin. And then, you know.
And it's funny because then when it actually did end, they didn't say that.
Right. Interesting.
Where's the consistency, Michael Cole?
Well, you know, let's just have JR and just be done with it.
Yep.
Anything else on this one, sir?
Nope, it's good.
Interesting. We go right to the back, and Vince is in the back, of course, admiring himself in the mirror.
As you do.
Just another poorly written sketch, because Steph comes in bringing his granddaughter.
Yep.
And Vince begins to talk to his granddaughter in the stroller, telling her all the things that he's going to do to Donald Trump that are mean and inappropriate for child's ears.
Yeah, they should not be listening to
those. Should not be doing that.
No.
But that pretty much ends badly. But fortunately without Mae Young
or thank goodness.
The fabulous Moolah.
Yeah.
But then we go right to match number 5, which is between
the ECW originals of Sabu, the Sandman, Tommy Dreamer, and Rob Van Dam versus the new breed of Elijah Burke, the alpha male Marcus Corvan, Matt Stryker, and Kevin Thorne.
I understand what they were going for in this match.
Mm-hmm.
Did they underestimate how over the ECW originals would be?
It seemed like it in this one. But it also could have been like the new breed is so maybe not over that it was like...
I didn't, Sabu started this match out with fast pace.
Yep.
I expected the ECW guys to be more over.
Yeah.
And so in their spots where they're dominating, I didn't see that response.
I agree.
And you're right. The new breed was green, not over.
Mm-hmm.
And so because this match really didn't get the response that I was thinking it might, that's what I was at. Like, it seemed to me like they really underestimated how, and although the ECW fans are passionate and loud, they may be too kind of, sparse,
yeah,
for this big of a venue,
especially like at this time, because when they brought the ECW brand back and like they just use it in name only, pretty much, they diluted it, so it's not as it's not hardcore, it's not the original guys, it's guys like this, it's guys like Elijah Burke and Matt Stryker and Kevin Thorne who are not ECW guys, so people didn't have that same thinking about it, you know, like when you're thinking back on it and like you romanticize it, you romanticize the old ECW, like, oh man, remember when they were just like beating people up in the bingo hall?
Well, yeah, because to me that brand is about a very particular style and a very specific attitude.
Yes.
And that's that kind of shows itself with its fans.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the response I saw
right.
in this match, mm-hmm. nor how it was presented.
No,
it was
I
like,
agree.
Here's a bunch of old timers, and they may not have even been old at this time,
because mm-hmm.
RVD was very over,
yeah.
but he was the only one over.
Yes.
With three other names that I knew of.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
The Sandman was a very popular mm-hmm. wrestler, and Sabu, you know.
Yeah.
He had one of the greatest angles ever with
Taz. Yeah. Yep.
So I would, that's the biggest thing I took out. I mean, it was a fine match, a lot of high spots, mm-hmm. a lot of action, but just a real kind of meh response.
Yeah, I agree. There was a couple times where, like, Matt Stryker would... He, like, took a monkey flip, and he didn't, like, rotate. He almost doesn't rotate enough,
right.
and he almost, like, landed on his head. Because he, like, when he was taking his bumps, he would do, like, a stiff... He was, like, stiff as a board a couple times. So, like, he'd take a DDT, and he was, like, stiff as a board. Take a monkey flip, and he's, like, woo! And then he almost lands on his head. And I'm, like, you gotta be careful, guy.
Well, he looked, like, almost out of shape for this one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he didn't look how I remember
him. Yeah.
But anyway, RVD ends up getting the 5-star splash for the win in this one. So the ECW originals actually do get to go over here. But I don't know. I don't think it hit the mark that they were hoping it would in this one.
Yeah, it wasn't. It kind of went up like a lead balloon.
We do a quick promo for WrestleMania 24, which will be in Orlando, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will take a quick minute to do a promo for Mania 24, which will still be in my dining room.
Yeah.
And then we cut
right. But we will move it to Orlando for this.
Boom.
One.
That's right. We're on the road. Yeah. JR and the King do a spot. They spot Thomas the Hitman Hearns,
mm-hmm.
who's talking to the camera, but it's not audible.
Yeah.
Probably perfect. For the best.
Yeah.
Thomas doesn't have the best English skills,
yeah.
but he's a fantastic middleweight.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go right to match number 6, the big one, and it's between
Umaga with Armando Estrada and Vince McMahon versus Bobby Lashley with Donald Trump.
And this is a hair versus hair mm-hmm. match.
Mm-hmm.
Each billionaire has handpicked. Their challenger in this match, Umaga, for Vince McMahon. And mm-hmm. we've got Bobby Lashley for Mr. Trump.
Yep.
Donald Trump makes his entrance, and it is raining $100 bills.
Mm-hmm.
And the crowd's pretty subdued as hundreds of dollars are falling. The one thing I noted is on this part was that both billionaires kind of looked pained to be dropping money. Like,
yeah.
Vince was looking at that, thinking it was a nice gimmick, but you could kind of see in his eyes, like, that's a lot of money to be dropping.
What am I doing?
Yeah, so I just kind of noted that. Yeah. What was your take on them using this match instead of using more kind of higher profile guys?
Mm.
Like, you know, just people that they weren't trying to give a big push to,
mm-hmm.
Like Big Show or like someone that was more established versus kind of two people that were just starting to come up, and then Lashley, who'd only been on the scene for a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think about that?
I think it was very much a situation where these two guys aren't doing anything. Let's put them in this match.
Yeah, I was just surprised because to me, the only thing, all of the things that were of interest in this match mm-hmm. were not the wrestlers.
Yeah. But I think like that's probably also why they picked Umaga and Bobby Lashley,
okay.
because it's like they're good enough in the ring, but they're not going to be the focus of this match. Like, the focus of the match is Donald Trump and Vince McMahon.
Right.
So if you put, like, Umaga and Bobby Lashley, they're going to have some good spots. They're going to have a solid match. They're not going to detract from what's happening outside the ring.
Right, which I'd rather have a wrestling match.
Agreed. I would, too.
Like, you've got Stone Cold in there that's the most over thing in the ring.
Yep.
And then, you know, really you're kind of looking at the posturing on the outside,
mm-hmm.
how Vince is going to try and gain the advantage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are letting these guys wrestle. Stone Cold has issue with each wrestler
yep.
At various spots during this match.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for the interference. Shane actually comes down.
Yep.
How did that break down? I'm just kind of talking without looking at my notes here.
Shane McMahon came down, and then like Austin pulled Umaga off of Bobby Lashley because he was given like the 5 count in the corner,
right.
and he wouldn't do it. So then. Austin actually pulled him off, and he was, like, gouging at his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, Shane McMahon got involved at this point, and then Umaga like hits Austin with the spike, the Samoan spike.
That's right.
So then Shane started throwing some lefts and rights at Bobby Lashley, and then he sets up the trash can to do coast to coast, which is one of the best moves.
He like, did it. He did it in a sport coat.
In a sport coat. Great. Yeah. So he does the coast to coast where he puts the trash can on a lying on a prone Bobby Lashley, and he jumps from one side of the ring to the other side.
That's one of my favorite Shane moves. Pretty badass.
And then Shane takes his jacket off, or his shirt, and he's wearing a ref shirt underneath.
Umaga then splashes Lashley, and then Shane starts to count. Stone Cold recovers and breaks up the count. Then we get some business on the outside, where Trump goes and clotheslines Vince, and then jumps on top of him and begins to give him the worst working punches. I have given the Divas a lot of stick for a lot of their moves. These are the worst
this is bad.
Working punches
this is bad.
That I've ever seen. But we're capitalizing on the heat between these two. Stone Cold stuns Umaga and Lashley spears him for the win. Vince is going to be bald. Then there's a whole big production about getting Vince into the chair. But they finally get him into the chair, and then they start to shave the billionaire's head. Yeah. What did you think of this finish?
Took a little while. It always kind of bothers me the way that Austin holds Vince McMahon's head.
How so?
He kind of like holds his neck like this.
Right.
Then like Bobby Lashley's also holding his arm. I don't know. It seemed a little weird to me.
Okay.
Like it's just the small thing that bothered me.
Right.
It's one of those things where there's no reason for it to bother me, but it does.
Okay.
That's all.
Well, he was strapped in a chair. They shave his head. They shave his head with clippers, and then they go for the razor.
Yeah.
Shaving cream everywhere.
Yeah, a bit messy.
And our 45th president of the United States is shaving a billionaire in the ring.
Yeah.
But the one thing I really did enjoy about this was the exchange that JR and the King had kind of during all this.
Yeah.
Because they were loving every single minute of it.
Oh, there's one thing that I forgot to mention. The barber's chair got an entrance, and it was longer than the Undertaker's.
It was
so fucking long. It's a goddamn barber's chair.
They basically had it on its own stage, and they kind of had it mechanically wheeled down to the stage, like without any assistance. It's not like someone was pushing it or anything. It was on hydraulics, and it just kind of made its way down to the ring. Pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So they've shaved Vince's head. He looks terrible. And then for some reason, Stone Cold stuns Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And if you thought his working punches were bad, the way he sells a stunner is terrible. So,
it's pretty bad.
I would like a split screen of Linda McMahon taking the stunner versus Donald Trump taking the stunner, because I think those are probably the two worst sells.
But I must say, it is pretty good for Trump to take the stunner, because like Donald Trump has no business taking a stunner.
No.
But he did. He did.
He did a clothesline, did some working punches, and took a stunner. So I'm sure he earned his payday pretty much.
Yeah.
The highest buy rate in WrestleMania history. Very cool.
You're welcome.
JBL and Michael Cole recap the Dark Lumberjack match that we had. And that leads us right to match number 7, which is between
Ashley versus Melina.
And this is a Lumberjill match
for
the WWE Women's title. And
all right, I'll take it over for you.
Thank you. I put
this is not a terrible match. It wasn't a great match.
Fight. We're gonna fight.
Also, it's like I hate that the Divas just have single names, and like single names are fine. Like if it's Melina, but when your name is Ashley, that's just not a wrestler's name.
It's not an exotic enough name for you.
Like if it's a male wrestler. Like if Stone Cold was just
Kate.
Called... Yeah. If Stone Cold was just called Steve.
Right.
Like, Steve is not the baddest SOB on the planet, right?
Right.
So then you just have this Ashley. Like, that is just... That's not a name.
Ashley and Janice.
Yes. Right?
So explain why this match wasn't terrible.
I don't remember. That's just what I put down for a note.
Oh, my goodness.
So, and it was a Lumberjill match, which is just, hey, we're going to get all these ladies a payday.
Which I understand, but if you're going to do that, like, one of the only note I put down is that there are plenty of opportunity for cat fights here on the outside that never happened.
Yeah.
Until after the bell, and then it was like it was the weirdest all-out brawl I've ever seen. It was like someone said, okay, everybody fight for 10 seconds and then stop.
Yep.
Because everybody just went after each other, and everyone seemed to just quit at the same time.
They like, probably
I'm
did.
I'm so mad. I'm finished. Everybody was done. It was the bizarrest thing.
I would not be surprised if they said, okay, you have 10 seconds to fight at the end. So they did all 10 seconds.
So choreographed. Wow. But this makes me so thankful for the lovely divas that we have now. Because this was such a dark time in the diva division. We go to the back, and they run a main event promo. And then we go to the main event, which is match number 8 between
Shawn Michaels versus John Cena.
This is for the WWE Heavyweight Championship. And anytime Shawn Michaels is involved in anything, I'm very excited.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was interesting that he came out to DX music. Yeah. Is there a reason for that?
I think they had brought back DX a little bit at this point.
Okay.
That
just like in a singles match, I was wondering why.
I was also
no big whoop.
Yeah, I also did expect Sexy Boy to be playing, which is also just a weird thing. Sexy Boy. That's just to say the word Sexy Boy right now.
I think
just,
we've learned a little bit about you right now.
No,
that's
I'm
pretty cool.
I'm fine with it. He can have whatever song he wants. It's just absolutely. Kind of a strange
he
thing
wants
to say.
To come out to that. He can come out to whatever he wants. Yeah. Cena arrives in a sports car. So there's a big exaggerated entrance where he's driving through the streets of Detroit, showing up in American Steel.
Yeah.
And he does like a little crash landing, I guess, through
drive through some glass. And then he has to wait a few seconds so that he can get into the driver's seat while the driver gets in the passenger seat.
Well,
I don't know.
I'm thinking that they shot all that footage.
No, he was driving. Yeah. He went from his hotel room halfway across the city.
Right. I'm sorry. That's my bad.
No, he didn't. He had to wait for the music to hit.
I know. HBK did that thing where he calls to the center of the ring for a handshake, which I always liked. I always liked when the heel would be like, hey, I'm going to play this straight up. Let's shake hands.
Yeah.
And then they just slaps the shit out of him.
Yep.
Every time they fall for it, I like that. What'd you think of this match? This is another instance where Cena's just reaction is hit or miss from the crowd. HBK is way over at this time.
Yep.
I know this is gonna be a good match. He's gonna make him look fantastic.
Yes.
But like Cena's reaction is still just not there.
There's some good stuff like right up top. This is one of my notes that I have. I go, they do a boxing spot. Shawn kept dunking Cena's punches.
Mm-hmm.
He's too tan.
I don't know. Yeah.
I was like, he has the same tanner that Vince had at 22.
It's this bizarre bronzer thing that they've got going on. And they may just get out of the tanning beds and just go to someone rubbing orange all over them.
Yeah.
Actually, it's more than orange. It's almost like gold.
Yeah.
There's a bizarre tanning ritual that they're doing now because it's not a natural color.
Yeah.
There was one questionable HBK selling this one on a clothesline from Cena.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of oversold it a little bit.
Yeah.
All of kind of like the Hulk Hogan match.
Hogan,
And which leads me to believe that HBK may not have been too cool with putting over Cena. What are your thoughts on that?
I would not be surprised, but I also think that he knew at this point that I'm still in the game, but John Cena is going to be here a lot longer than me. So I think that might have been one of his, one of his 90s character traits coming back in for a second,
okay.
Which I wouldn't be surprised with because, I mean, he was a jerk, but he has a penchant for doing that.
Are you aware of any heat between those two, legit?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I think
in other words, is it just... It's not like he doesn't want to do favors and stuff like that. It's just, I don't like this dude.
It could be
that type of thing.
It could also be like, Cena is awful at selling. So then Shawn Michaels is like, well, if I'm going to be the only one selling, I'm going to sell hard.
It looks really deliberate.
Yeah, no, it is. There's one point Michaels chopped Cena, and it was one of the loudest chops I've ever heard.
Big chop.
It was a huge chop. Michaels worked Cena's knee for a while, and then... JR goes, a one-legged man cannot be the WWE champion. No offense to John Cena or any other one-legged man. come on.
HBK had some really good spots in this one. The moonsault off the second rope is becoming one of the staples of his program.
Yep.
And he lands it on Cena on the table.
Mm-hmm.
It looked really good.
HBK,
started to dominate early in this match. You know, we're trying to build up sympathy for Cena, which really didn't get a big reaction on the crowd. Because he's working on Cena's knee, and one of the things I noticed about Cena is they'll do this body part bit, mm-hmm. and then as he gets his comeback, he forgets to sell the body part they just spent 5 minutes trying to get a sympathy on. And
yeah,
that's, I mean,
yeah, we had mentioned that the last episode where he just like, oh, it's time for my comeback. I'm healthy. Like,
right. HBK really kind of took care of Cena in this one. Mm-hmm. There was a spot where he did the pile driver on the steps.
Yep.
And HBK took the entire blow on that one, really protecting him on that. And, I mean, my last note on this one is HBK is just the best ever. Like,
yeah.
He's just the best.
He's an amazing in-ring performer.
He made Cena look like $1 million in this one. There was a nice spot where they avoided each other's finish.
Yeah.
You know,
real good spot.
Really smooth.
Shawn Michaels went for a splash off the top. Cena caught him. Then he tossed him back over his shoulders to go for an FU. Then Shawn flipped out of that, goes for a sweet chin music. Cena grabs the leg, goes into an STF, then rolls out of it. Shawn Michaels goes for an inside cradle, and then for a two count. I'm like, that's a good spot.
That was a really good spot. HBK got a little bit of color in this one.
He did.
I thought it was significant that because I think he wanted to get the color so that the tap would look better at the end, because in the end, he does end up tapping to John Cena.
Yeah.
But the blood wasn't flowing in this one. No. And so I honestly thought the end of the match that HBK kind of wishes there were more blood, because it would make the finish more sense.
Yep.
I mean, that was a little botched to me. Like, he just didn't get the kind of color he wanted to.
It
really dried up fast, and he never went back to it.
Yeah,
did you see where he did it?
It was when he got...
of course, I did not.
Yeah, it was when he got sent into the post, and he took it head on. But as soon as he took the post, the camera cut away from him and focused on John Cena, so they didn't actually show when he had the blade.
There was something interesting that happened at the end of this match. Anyway, John Cena ends up going over. He is the champ.
Yeah.
And HBK kind of walks off after this match. No handshake. They really don't do that anymore. But he seems to kind of be walking off in a huff, you know, not too cool. Cena kind of went after him to try and stop him.
Yeah.
Maybe to shake his hand or hug it out or I don't know what the intent was. But HBK kind of walked off, which, you know, to me, fuels all kinds of heat thoughts and what have you.
John Cena sometimes seems very oblivious to things. Like, I don't know, like, how accurate it is, but just, like, from my viewpoint, sometimes he's like, everything's fine. Everything's great. Things are going so well. Like, why isn't everybody on top? Like me, you know? How come you're not 15-time world champion?
That's right.
Like, he just...
Why doesn't everyone look like me?
Yeah, right? Like, I know that he works very hard and whatnot. He goes to the gym all the time. But sometimes, like, maybe he was given things so much that he doesn't realize that some people have to work so much harder. Or, his experience is not how everyone's experience is. So, like, I don't necessarily know how it... compares to this exact moment. But.
Well, to that point, you know, HBK is someone that had to fight the size thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, think about how long he had to work, how many opening matches for WrestleMania he had to do versus Tatanka. And, you know, he really had to carve his own path because it was against the grain of what the promotion thought was what sold.
Yeah.
And then, conversely, Cena is the prototype. He's Vince's wet dream as far as what you use to produce a promotion.
Yeah.
So to me, there's every reason for HBK to be a little bit resentful of that dude.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Cena was on top on his third WrestleMania, he's got the belt. You know, he's the face of the company.
Yeah.
Whereas it took, you know, Shawn Michaels had to wrestle with Giannetti and like he really had to
for a long time
carve his own path.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I completely
that makes sense.
Get it.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, that's all we have for WrestleMania 23. Let's get right to our awards of the night. Jue, what is your pop of the night, sir?
My pop of the night is for when The Undertaker won. It was he got a really good pop out of that.
My pop of the night is for when Vince was getting his hair cut. You know, hey, you paid for it, world. You enjoy it, buddy.
Good.
My botch of the night was Batista twice in his match, one being too close to the shoulder. But the bigger one was when Undertaker is going through the ropes and he... He didn't catch him as well as he could have.
Yeah.
What is your botch of the night, base. Sir?
My botch of the night is John Cena not selling his leg that Michaels was working on for 10
that
minutes.
That makes sense. Yeah, we made a point of that as well.
Yep.
What is your bump of the night, sir?
My bump of the night is Kennedy's rolling senton to Hornswoggle.
Mine is from that very same match, and it's the Jeff Hardy leg drop.
Yeah. I had between those two.
I will disagree with you because that is the biggest bump I've ever seen.
It's a big one.
That was pretty crazy. My spot of the night is the build up to the end of the Undertaker match,
mm-hmm.
The Batista bomb choke slam segment where we're taking a lot of big blows, and then we finally get the reversal on one for the win.
Mm-hmm.
What is your spot of the night, sir?
My spot of the night is from the main event, the splash off the top, catch, FU, flip out, switching music, STFU, inside cradle, two count spot.
Really,
that was
good,
a solid spot.
Really good spot. I'm sure all conceived of by HBK.
Yeah.
What is your worst match of the night, sir?
Worst match, Great Khali versus Kane.
That is probably the winner. I put the ECW Originals versus the New Breed match just because of I was expecting something more than what that was. It was just a disappointment to me. My best match of the night was Money in the Bank. I really liked it. Every person that was in that match was really capable and fun to watch. Mm. Really good spots. I just like the way they built to the end of that. What is your best match of the night, sir?
Mine, it was between Money in the Bank and the main event, and I went main event for this one.
What was it about the main event that made you lean in that direction?
Honestly, I think that one spot that is my spot of the night, I think that alone put it over. Wow, that's a really solid spot.
That makes sense to me. Joy, who is your MVP for WrestleMania 23?
My MVP for WrestleMania 23 is the man in the front row with the pink shirt.
Explain. Okay. You're going to have to explain on this one. I'm not letting that go.
I didn't think that there was anybody willing for my MVP status, so I went with a guy that he was just standing up and clapping. He was just, I don't know.
Because he had everyone's back. He was there supporting.
Yeah, he was there. That's right.
Person.
He was support. He was not taking the spotlight for anybody. I mean, maybe a little bit. He's wearing a pink shirt in the front row at WrestleMania.
To me, the hair for hair match is kind of passe at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I had seen it, it was always against people where their hair was their gimmick.
Yeah.
So there were huge stakes to it. But I gave mine to Vince McMahon because he sat in the chair and he took the haircut.
Good.
So that's solid. That's what wins it for me. Well, that's all that we have for Mania 23. Please join us next time for Mania 24 when we're coming to you from a dining room in Orlando somewhere.
Yep.
But here are some of the matches that we've got. We've got Batista versus Umaga. We've got another Money in the Bank ladder match, which has a pretty interesting winner. We've got the career-threatening match of Shawn Michaels versus Ric Flair. Triple threat match, Randy Orton, John Cena, and Triple H for the WWE Championship. And then the main event is The Undertaker versus Edge for the World Heavyweight Championship. Mm-hmm. But until then, I have been Terry, Mr. Catlett. Here as always with Jouet, Mr. Holt, and we will see you next time.
Bye.